there are no quotas, but the committee does follow, I mean, not strictly, but as a guideline, a pyramid.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of season 3 of the Amplify Horse Racing Podcast. I'm thinking that's how far along we are. We've had this podcast going for quite some time, so it's really exciting to kick off 2023 and jump into our third season. So, Caitlin and Timothy, welcome back. How's it going?
Hi. It is. You're right. It is the third season. That's wild to think about. It's great. It's been a busy start to the new year.
So for anybody who's joining us for the first time, I guess we should all introduce ourselves. My name is Anise Montpleasure, and I'm the executive director of Amplify Horse Racing. Caitlin?
I am Caitlin Christofferson. I am the COO of Grand Slam Social, a digital marketing agency that specializes in horse racing. And this is my third season as the co-host of the Amplify Horse Racing podcast.
Yeah, I'm Timothy Latteau. I'm also a co-host and producer of the podcast. And I'm a journalism student at Marquette University in my senior year, graduating this spring. So we'll see how the job hunt goes. So yeah, but I'm excited to have you guys listening along for our third season. And I can't wait for all the great lineup of guests that we'll have on as well.
And shameless plug, Timothy is also a graduate of Amplify's mentorship program, which we provide to get youth and young adults started in the industry and pair them up with an industry professional. And I think at the time that this episode gets published, our applications for the spring session will probably be closed, and we'll be ready to select the next intake of mentees and get them started on the right foot in the industry. So Timothy is awesome. I'm pulling for you for the big jobs going forward.
Yeah, thanks, Anise. Definitely a great program. Something that you want to get involved in, whether you're a mentee or a mentor. So I hope that anyone interested reaches out to Anise or anyone of us with Amplify for more information on that.
And Caitlin, how's the showing going? You're back at it already this year.
I'm back, yeah. Charles is not back quite yet, but he has had some time off. He's gotten really strong, and he is looking great. So I'm just kind of tuning up my skills before I bring him back. So for anybody who doesn't know, Charles is my off-the-track thoroughbred that I adopted in 2020. And so he will be 6 next month. I got him when he was 3, and he has been showing the A Circuit Hunters for the past 2 years.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. So everybody's year is off to a great start. I'm now full-time with Amplify, which is exciting. I mentioned that at the end of last year that I was getting rolling with that on a full-time basis. Timothy is well into his internship. Caitlin is showing and traveling the U.S. and all that. And we're back at the podcasting. So we had talked in December about how we were going to kick off this season of podcasts. And it seems like for the last couple seasons, we always try to kind of set the tone and have an initial episode that is looking ahead at the rest of the year or is going to provide some kind of foundational knowledge to listeners that is going to be really useful as the year goes on. And a question that we frequently get with Amplify and newcomers to the industry is trying to understand different levels of racing. I think when taking at face value, somebody might look at the thoroughbred industry and think that all races are the same, that they're all the same level, and that's not true. You have allowance races and claiming races and maiden races and stakes races, and then you get into graded stakes races, which are going to be your highest echelon of racing. So today we're going to be talking all about the American Graded Stakes Committee, and I want to read a piece on the Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association website because they do have some great information on the site about the Graded Stakes Committee. And it was founded by TOBA, Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, in 1973 and has been managed by the organization for the last 49 years. The purpose of the committee is to provide owners and breeders of thoroughbred horses a reliable guide to the relative quality of thoroughbred bloodstock by identifying those races whose recent renewals have consistently attracted the highest quality competition. So that was a lot of words. And to explain a lot of that, I'm going to welcome our guest for today, Andy Schweigart, who's the Director of Industry Relations and Development at the Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, TOBA. We love acronyms in the thoroughbred industry, and is also Secretary of the American Graded Stakes Committee. So welcome, Andy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I have to make a confession. Can I start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Because this is so embarrassing. I'm probably going to get roasted on Twitter for this. But because this is a podcast for newcomers into horse racing and people who are younger and might not know a ton about the industry, but are thinking they want to get involved, when I went and interviewed for my first like big job in horse racing, I did not really know the difference between like a maiden special weight and the Kentucky Derby, or like a grade one. So that is my embarrassing. That's where I started at.
No, but that's probably an indicative story, or, you know, common amongst a lot of newcomers to the sport, right? Like, that's why we're here, to explain this. So Andy, I shared that blurb, you know, right off the bat, but start us off with how the American Graded Stakes Committee began and why. Like, why was that something that needed to be formed in the U.S. thoroughbred industry?
Okay. Actually, the Graded Stakes Committee started in 1973, and it was mostly at the request of the European racing authorities, because they had just started in the prior year, and actually had been working for a few years before that, on developing what we now know as their European Pattern Committee to identify top races and quality bloodstock in Europe. And they asked that the U.S. have a similar, or develop a similar system. And so the president of TOBA at the time, Jacques Wimpheimer, took that to heart and went about and formed the American Graded Stakes Committee in 1973. So that was the first year they evaluated.
So prior to that time, and maybe you can't answer this, but prior to 1973, basically all races were the same, and it was just known by horse owners and trainers that some races were better than others just based on conditions and history?
Yeah, you could. That's a pretty good description of it. If you looked at a sales catalog prior to 1973, you would have seen races in black type, stakes races. But the Kentucky Derby would be in black type, and a $5,000 stakes race at Shenandoah Downs would have been the same black type. There was no differentiation between the two. And so the grading system was developed to provide owners and breeders with a way of differentiating between stakes races and to see which ones are better and which ones may be lower down on the pyramid. And black type goes back to 1952. Fasig Tipton started it in 52, and Keeneland adopted it in 1960. So it was still, in a way, relatively new by the early 70s.
That's really interesting. I actually didn't know that. I mean, I know the term black type and what it refers to, but I didn't know about how black type actually started.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. And so when it comes to the American Graded Stakes Committee, explain the committee to us and what that annual schedule looks like when the committee convenes to talk about the grading of races.
Okay. Currently, the committee is composed of 11 members, and six TOBA members who are owner breeders and five racing officials from around the country. And it's chaired by one of the TOBA members elected by his fellow TOBA members on the committee, his or her fellow TOBA members on the committee. And they meet late in the year, typically in December, to evaluate the races and assign the grades for the coming calendar year. So they just met in December of 22 to assign the grades for calendar year 23. They also meet two other times during the year, once in April and once in August. Those are mainly policy meetings where they'll discuss maybe current trends or what's going on in the industry as far as stakes racing or racing in general and how that may be impacting graded stakes races in the U.S. and possibly what should they be then thinking about when they go into the grading session. A case in point being current discussion, the reduced foal crops in recent years, where we're down to less than 20,000 foals now for, was this third or fourth year in a row? And so the racing population available is not the same as what it was several years back when we had 35,000 to 36,000 foals a year. And so then, but we still have close to the same number of graded races. And can the current population support that many graded races? That's been a big topic of discussion. And I think you saw with some of the results of the grading session this year, where there were more races downgraded than upgraded, and a slight reduction in the number of races. And I can foresee that trend continuing in the near future.
Andy, you talked about how those listings, they kind of just came out like a month and a half ago in December. And like some races, you know, move up in status and some races get downgraded as well. I know there were like five races that were downgraded from a grade one to grade two. Mm-hmm. I know like the Stephen Foster though just became a grade one. Like, can you talk about what goes into those decisions and like, are there any quotas or anything you guys have to meet?
No, there are no quotas, but the committee does follow. I mean, not strictly, but as a guideline, a pyramid. So there, that where the graded grade one races are at the top, and grade three races are at the bottom of the pyramid. So you'd have fewer grade ones, more grade twos, and more grade threes. And the pyramid's roughly 20, 30, 50. So 20% grade ones, 30% grade twos, 50% grade threes. And they're fairly close to that, and they try and stick to that. And so what goes into evaluating a race is the committee has statistical measurements that it uses, percentage of graded stakes winners in a race, points earned. So a horse can earn a point by finishing first, second, or third in a graded, listed, or stakes race. And it's a sliding scale. So obviously more for finishing first, second, and third in a grade one, as opposed to a two, to a three, and down to listed, and then non-listed black type races. And so all those statistics are compiled by the Jockey Club information systems and put into workbooks. 17 workbooks, one for each division that the committee evaluates. And it goes through and evaluates the races within each division and actually within each grade level. So it is comparing races to their peers within the grade level in that particular division. It's not comparing races across divisions to come up with a grade. It's comparing like races within a division. And the discussion really comes down to there are over 900 races that the committee that were up for evaluation this year. But the discussion in the meeting comes down to those races that are likely to either be upgraded or downgraded. Obviously, they can't go through all 900 races, and they just focus their attention on races that are either doing poorly or doing very well and may deserve an upgrade.
So I read that there's a number of other criteria that are considered as well, like purse money, drug testing, medication, longevity of the race's existence, restricted races, conditions, and invitational races. Can you talk us through those criteria and how they're also factored into the decision-making process?
All right. Well, those would be more eligibility criteria.
Gotcha.
So that maintain or keep their eligibility for grading, it would meet those. They would have to meet those criteria. Now, if there's a change in the conditions of a race, the race is automatically downgraded, and then the committee reevaluates it on a timely basis during the year to determine if the race can still attract the quality horses needed to maintain the grade they assigned it before the condition of a race was changed. So if a race changes by more than an eighth of a mile, or goes from a sprint to a route, or a route to a sprint, or if it switches surfaces, turf to dirt, or if there's a significant change on the calendar, more than 30 days, a race earns its grade partly by its placing on the calendar and being able to attract those horses at that time of year. And if a race moves from, say, April to October, there are other different races in October than April, other races around it. What impact will those have, its new placement have on being able to attract horses? It might be a crowded time where the track is looking to move the race, and the committee may say, that's not going to work. You probably shouldn't do that unless you want to open yourself up to a downgrade.
It just sounds like so much data that's assessed, you know, when it comes to the quantity of races that you're looking at and all the different criteria and everything that is, you know, pulled into the decision-making process. How much studying does the committee have to do before they convene every year? You know, is each member, you know, doing like nightly research and reviewing all of this criteria for a certain period of time before you all get together as a group, or how does that work?
Yeah, some do. Typically the workbooks and all the supporting materials go to the committee about 2 weeks prior to the meeting. But we recently have been letting committee members know which divisions that they're to present at the meeting. So a member will basically present a division to kick off the discussion on the division. And they're known at last year we did it in midsummer, so they were looking from midsummer on, but this year they started from the first of the year with the divisions that they know they're going to be presenting at the grading session in December, so they could follow a particular division or two throughout the year. For most, it's a pretty intense 2 weeks of studying.
And I want to talk a little bit more, Andy, about, like, for people listening to this who may still be trying to understand why it's divided and why there are certain races run the way they are. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the overall, or just kind of boilerplate, importance of having the graded stakes and the divisions?
Well, those are your best races in your division. And so it provides, as Anise read at the beginning, it provides owners and breeders with a reasonably or a reliable indicator of quality. So yes, everyone has their own opinion, even the graded stakes members. Not everyone agrees on a particular race or how a particular race is viewed. We have statistics. But that's only part of it. We have these 11 people on the committee, not because they can read statistics in a book, but because they also closely follow the game and they know the game and the races and the horses very well, and each brings their own perspective. They're from all around the country. This isn't a BCS point system.
And I would think there's
need
also
any members for it.
Right.
So, identify the best.
Yeah. And same kind of like with the BCS point system, when they kind of figured out that the college football playoffs, and that wasn't working when you had teams getting to the championships and they were getting blown out of the water. I would think that part of it too is part of the horse's welfare. You want to make sure that horses are somewhat evenly matched, or that they know what they're entering into before they do so. Because some horses are just more talented. That's how it is.
Right. Connections of a horse will look at a race and they'll see it's a grade one or grade two, and they'll that may be a little bit too far for us, a little bit too high a class to take on, and we'll shoot for the grade three or listed level until the horse shows us enough where maybe he or she warrants trying better competition.
Anise, you go.
No, I just had a quick clarification question, guys. Sorry, I don't follow other sports. What is the BCS point system? Somebody help me out here.
Well, since I brought it up, it was the bowl championship system. So when college football started the championship game and the top four teams made it into their two playoff games, and then the two winners go to the final game. When that first started, it was totally automated.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It was in bracketed. And so I think, if I recall correctly, maybe it was, I don't know, almost 10 years ago now, but maybe 2016, 2017. You had Alabama and Notre Dame meet up, I think, in the champion. And Alabama just ran away with the game. So it's kind of like the Super Bowl too, right? You want the two best teams to be there. Nobody wants to see repeatedly, obviously with Flightline, it's a different deal. He was just in his own class. But nobody wants to see a horse race that is unevenly matched again and again, because we'd all probably get pretty bored with it.
Thank you, guys. That helps me. See, we're even learning about other sports here.
Yeah, definitely.
Analogies. Timothy, take it away.
Yeah, well, Andy, I think sometimes when these listings come out, towards the end of the calendar year, fans can sometimes get disappointed with some of the results of them, especially if they're a fan and they have their track and one of their races has been downgraded. What do you want to say to these fans so they don't lose hope? Is there a chance that the race can get back upgraded, in a few years' time if it draws better horses? Or can you just talk about the chances of the race kind of having a rebound?
Well, sure. A race may be downgraded, but it is still then reviewed the next year, and any race can be upgraded or downgraded in a particular year. So races do come back regularly. Stephen Foster, case in point, that was downgraded 5-6 years ago from grade one to grade two, and the committee elevated it back to grade one for 23. So yeah, it's not a one and done deal. The races are evaluated every year, and races, we have a dynamic system here in the U.S. where races do move up and down, and some within a short period of time.
I was just going to add another example that I remembered in recent history, the Bluegrass. And I actually looked up the Toyota Bluegrass Stakes on Equibase. And years and years ago, it was a grade one, and then it went to a grade two again for a few years. Then it went back to a grade one, went back to being a grade two for a while. And then as of last year, 2022, it went back to a grade one. So I definitely see the fluctuations over time. Sorry, Caitlin, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, I think that obviously the purses must play in a lot into it as well. And I don't know how that helps it vary from year to year. say if you have a grade two race that maybe suddenly gets like a big name sponsor, and so they're able to upgrade the purse money quite a bit, and therefore draw like a higher class of horses, I guess that would affect the graded component as well, correct?
Yes. I mean, the old saying, money makes the mare go. People are going to follow the money. And so, yeah, if a track puts up more money, they certainly do have a better chance of attracting a better quality horse to the race.
Andy, you had... Oh, sorry, Anise.
No, go ahead, Tim.
Okay. Andy, you had mentioned how races are kind of spaced period, or they kind of look at like the where they are in the calendar when considering the grading of those races. Is there any kind of like consideration about like the geographic location too, in addition to that?
No, if you're asking, does the committee make sure that, you know, the East has the same, you know, has a grade one race, the Midwest has a similar grade one race, and the West Coast has to have the same grade one race? No, but it does. Geography will play a part in that. If it's in, say, the Northeast Mid-Atlantic region, where there are a lot of racetracks within a relatively close proximity of each other, and the ability of horses to move between those tracks is much easier than a horse in California shipping to the East Coast to run. Yeah, then that may play into it if there are other races in the region.
Another question I had, Andy, and this is, I guess, maybe is a unique example, or I just can't think of other similar examples, but I thought about the Pegasus World Cup and how that took the place on the calendar of the Dawn Handicap. It used to be the Dawn, which is a grade one. Now it's Pegasus World Cup, still a grade one. Is there any consideration with that, or anything that the committee has to look at if, I mean, I guess essentially the race is, you know, its name is being changed, but also the conditions as well. How do you evaluate a situation like that?
Yeah, when Gulfstream was thinking of changing the Dawn to the Pegasus concept, and at the time, the first couple of years, I think, they came up with the idea of, in order to, you wouldn't have the standard entry process as you would for any other stakes race. An owner had to buy a slot for $1 million, and then you didn't have to name the horse until entry time. So that was a bit different, but everything else about the race was the same: the distance, the date, the racetrack, the age, the sex, that was all the same. So it was just a question of whether really the entry, this new entry process, would somehow run afoul of the committee's eligibility rules. And
very interesting.
And now, since that idea did not prove successful or popular, it's reverted back to just a standard nomination and entry process, or it's an invitational and an entry process. So in essence, it's just now a name change from what it was.
Have there been any other scenarios like that over the years that I just haven't thought of, or even unique situations that pop into your mind that the committee has had to consider along the way?
Yes, a very recent one is the three grade one races from, well, formerly grade one, now two grade ones and a grade two from Arlington Park, the Arlington Million, the Beverly D, and the Secretariat. They are now going to be run at Colonial Downs this summer. And the committee has in its rules that in order for a race to be moved to a different venue, everything must stay essentially the same: the date, the distance, the surface, the purse, and the region. Now, I don't think anyone can say that Chicago's in the same region as, you know, Southeast Virginia. So the committee had a long discussion, actually several discussions, about that and whether they should allow the grades to follow the races. Now, I mean, Churchill can do whatever they want with their races. It's just a matter to the committee. It's whether or not they will assign a grade to the race if such a move was made. And yeah, they talked for quite a while and went back and forth on it, and in the end decided that simply it was better for racing to have those three graded opportunities still around as opposed to taking the grades away and asking that the races be run twice before being eligible again for grading.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of people were wondering what was happening to those historic races.
Yeah. Yeah. They were certainly in the forefront of most people's minds. And I think some people agreed with what the committee did, and others, maybe even some on the committee, didn't.
Because yeah. They used to be not only major graded stakes, but they were also Breeders' Cup qualifying races, the Beverly and the Arlington. So even, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, winning that race would earn you a spot in the Breeders' Cup and some entry fees and things like that.
All very interesting considerations. I can definitely see where all of this would be really confusing to, you know, a newcomer to the sport, because honestly, I learned stuff just from going on the website. I do want to encourage anyone out there that wants to learn more about this. You can go to toba.org/graded-stakes, and you can read all about you know, the 2023 graded stakes races, historical info about graded stakes races. They even have some really cool graphs where it shows the distribution of graded stakes races by track around the U.S. So lots of cool graphs. If you're really interested in data and learning more about this, the website is incredibly thorough in how it describes the entire process. And Andy, we usually start the episode with this, but I guess this time we'll sort of wrap up the episode with this. How did you get involved in the industry initially?
Initially, as grew up a fan near Saratoga, and as I got older, that interest increased. And when I went to college, or graduated from college, I had a degree in accounting. And when the firms came on campus, the public accounting firms came on campus to recruit me. One of them, they always showed you their client list to impress the college kids and maybe entice them to come work for them. Well, one of them showed their list, and it was, they had the New York Racing Association as one of their major clients. So I happened to take a job with them and asked to be put on the account. They had never had anyone ask such a thing before. And so I was worked on the NYRA account for 4 years right after I got out of school, sort of went west and got away from it, but was actually looking to get into the industry at the time, but there wasn't really anything for me. And then did some work out in the Bay Area and decided that's not what I wanted to do. And decided to make a career change and go back to the U of A through the racetrack industry program.
Oh, fantastic.
And so I did that for 3 semesters. Because I transferred all my credits and just needed the 3 semesters in the program to do that. Did the animal science track, and while I was there, did a research project for TOBA. And timing's everything in life. And when I finished up, the gentleman who had me do the research project was moving on out on his own and referred me to Dan Metzger as a possible replacement for him. and Dan liked me, and almost 23 years later, here I am.
That's awesome.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I love hearing the University of Arizona connection. They're one of our clients, and I had the pleasure of speaking or moderating a panel in December there. And they do amazing things for the industry, and they have brought amazing talent into the industry and continue to do so.
Absolutely. It's a great program for anyone interested in getting into racing, whether as a regular student or like me. There were many others like me as someone looking to make a career change.
That's a great story to share, because we do have several people reach out to Amplify where they majored in something that's not, you know, blatantly horsey, but then they don't realize that it can actually be applied to the thoroughbred industry or the equine industry. So accounting, you know, data analysis, mm-hmm. a lot of careers in that field. So
we have a lot of lawyers in the industry.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you so much, Andy, for sharing that story with us. Caitlin or Timothy, any last questions?
Who is your favorite racehorse of all time?
Oh.
Maybe top two or three.
I don't think anyone will remember this horse, but growing up as a kid and as a fan, I was making bets as a kid. There was a horse, Florida bred, by the name of Fantasy and Reality, probably back in the late 70s, early 80s, who was a 7 furlong specialist. And would follow him religiously and make a bet on him every time he ran 7 furlongs in a stakes race. In fact, I remember he beat Cox's Ridge one year. I can't remember the race, but he beat Cox's Ridge in a race. I just love that horse. I mean, he was a game old horse that just would make a big run, big closing sprinter at 7 furlongs. So, I mean, he always sticks in my mind, I guess, as the first horse I was really attached to. Probably Affirmed would be another one. The Alidar Affirmed rivalry was really what got me interested in the game.
That's a great question to leave it on, Caitlin. I love that. Andy, do you have any final words of wisdom to share with our listeners?
Oh, I'd just like to say that the 11 people on the committee do their very best to check their biases at the door. I mean, they're all industry people, so obviously we're all going to have some sort of a bias. And they do their very best to check that at the door and step back and take a big picture view of racing and our top level racing to try and, as fairly as possible, mm-hmm. assign these grades. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, as I've heard so many times during the year, they're accused of being just a bunch of backroom deals with one person scratching the other person's back. That couldn't be farther from the truth. And anyone who's come as a guest to observe the committee leaves with that notion totally dispelled. So I think I'd like to leave that out there for everybody.
Thank you so much for the work that you do. Yeah, thank you. I'm sure it can be a very thankless job, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It is one of those jobs that if you didn't make someone upset, you're probably not doing it right.
That's probably good words of advice for life, right? If you don't make someone upset, you're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Andy. Everyone, that was Andy Schweigart, Director of Industry Relations and Development for TOBA and Secretary of the American Graded Stakes Committee. So thank you so much for joining us to explain what all goes into the Graded Stakes Committee and deciding graded stakes races in the U.S. And hopefully we all see you again soon, maybe live in person at a track somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you very much for having me and letting me explain it.
Everyone out there, get out and amplify horse racing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Amplify Horse Racing Podcast.
Be sure to check out our website, www.amplifyhorseracing.org, and follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for more of our content.
If you have any podcast ideas, please email us at info@amplifyhorseracing.org.
We'll catch you next time.